Accession number 30134, Reel 8.
Reel 8. And you were just coming back after being left out of battle and just joining the battalion back at Noron-le-Bage, aren't you?
That's right, yes. Yeah.
Yep.
Good. Right. Well, now then, after that, we passed through this gap. And that was a most horrendous thing. It was really a charnel house. This gives only a small picture of what one met.
Yeah.
But it was wreckage all over the place. We had to move slowly, of course, we were in bust. And hot September day.
August, September.
Mm-hmm. September.
Yeah.
No, just a second. I'll just. 19th of August. No, that's right. Well, then. Yes, it's still August, yes. Yeah. Latter end of August. Mm-hmm. Because everything, I mean, wreckage all over the place, and bodies, human and animal, because the Germans used quite a lot of horse transport for their divisions moving on foot, because they moved at the horse's pace anyhow. I mean, I talked about low category divisions before, you know, but they had horse transport, and there were dead animals everywhere, broken up carts, broken up guns, lorries and so on, a lot of lorries on the roadside full of bodies, bloated.
Yes.
And of course the stench was absolutely unbearable.
This is, of course, what you're describing here is the valet's pocket.
That's right,
the valet's neck pocket. Of that pocket. That's there, isn't it?
The neck, yeah. And, of course, hordes of fat, juicy blue bottles everywhere.
Yes.
And some people were able to get the stench out of it, tried to gas masks, but it was a hot day and something took it off. But
yes.
It was a trial going through that.
Yes.
But that was the wreckage of an army, and it was absolutely abominable.
I've read somewhere, Joe, that even the Typhoon pilots, when they were over there, that area, bombing and strafing that area, have said that they could detect that smell from the
absolutely.
Aircraft.
It must rises.
Yes.
Now, we got eventually to the, I wonder if it's here, Forêt of Saint-André, where we reorganized. Mm. It was... Because this map is good, but it's got so much detail and things written over it.
This one is a reproduction of a map of the time, isn't it?
Probably, yeah. Forêt de Saint-André.
This valley, Jim?
Yes, that's right. Here we are, Forêt de Saint-André.
Yes.
That is where we reorganized.
You're pointing to a place there about, well, a very few miles just
south of
Falaise. Yes.
That's right, yes. Yes, I would say, on a scale. Anyhow, just a few miles south.
Yes.
Now, that is where reorganized. Because it was a big reorganization, not only just the battalion, but owing to the casualties and the resulting shortage of men, not to mention tanks, just en passant, in the Operation Goodwood, which was meant to break through onto the Bourg-Bos area and open their country, we lost no fewer than 400 of our 800 tanks.
Yes.
That was gained about 10 miles on, that's it. And that a lot of...
That was on the other side of Caen, Joe, wasn't
that's
it?
That's right,
as
yes.
You were on the west of Caen, this was slightly to the east
that's
of Caen.
Yes. That was an earlier offensive, and
yes.
It was hoped to break through, but that's what resulted.
Mm.
Also, infantry losses were very heavy, to the extent that two divisions... 50th and 59th were broken up and fed to reinforcements to the west. And our 5th Battalion was in the 59th Division, and that was broken up. And that was the one that Marcus Irvine Andrews joined, and only to be evacuated sick
yes.
at the beginning of Normandy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we got a lot of reinforcements, including some very senior people, including Major Bremner, who was 10 years older than I am. I was a junior, so I had to make way. He took over. Well, there wasn't a company to take over anyway.
Yes, decimated.
And I went, for the time being, second in command to Major Lake in D Dog Company, until I got another company, beginning November, A Company, with which I finished the war.
Yes.
But there was a great reorganizer. In fact, we were over strength. I mean, there was a general sort of shaking out and so on. That is the Forêt de Saint-André. We had a glut of officers in other ranks, well over establishment. Then we moved, well, as I said, we moved through the wreckage, I think, before that, yes, that's right. Well, now, Normandy, just to sum it up, really, I mean, this is really the end of our Normandy experience. It was a sticky, messy period, which put a great deal of strain, both physical and mental, moral, on everybody. But we had really, I mean, I can't recollect a single instance of anybody cracking up. I think it was a result of our very thorough training and hardening, especially under the direction, well, of course, we had General Lislain, but also the immediate was Colonel Burton, who trained and took us up. I think it says a lot for the battalion that they endured all that and did their job and did it very commendably and were able, almost like a greyhound out of its box, to do a thing like Wahabu and carry it off so well.
Yes.
And the resilience was tremendous, really. I mean, considering all the odds we were up against. So, from there, we went across to France.
Because, can I just, for the tape again, Joe?
Yeah.
Because, to my recollection, the style of warfare, if you like, now, the style of warfare is changing somewhat because the Germans are retreating, aren't they?
That's right.
And they're in full retreat, aren't they, really, at this stage?
Got it.
They're in full retreat. They're retreating as fast as they can go. For
absolutely. Well, it was, the thing was somewhat chaotic altogether. Because they were retreating and really getting away fast, but not in a very coordinated manner. All the resistance was sporadic. Some fought extremely hard and tenaciously. Others just gave themselves up.
Yes.
And that was the pattern.
Yes.
There's not much point in detailing the move across France, apart from Saint-Paul, which we're coming to.
Okay.
Yes. We went briefly. The route was from Bayeul across the Seine at near all in transport, of course. And also taking all due precautions, we always had a sort of carriers and advance guard and so on, and never harboured up at night without sentries and, you know, taking precautions.
Yes.
Because there were odd bodies left behind,
yes,
and some of them showed remarkable fight. Yes, near Évreux, that's where we crossed, somewhere in that area.
Okay.
And then went off up across the Somme, near Domart, somewhere.
Yes, just to the north, west of Paris.
Yes, somewhere that area.
Near Amiens, you're showing me there.
Yes, I'll just have a look.
Yeah, we were looking for a place called Domart, which we found, Joe, just to the north of Amiens. Yeah.
In fact, to I think round it off, as far as Germany, we say they were off balance.
Yes.
Off balance.
Yes.
And they didn't really regain that balance until they got to Holland. And there, with the numerous dikes and ditches and flooding the country, they really sort of put up a firm front, coordinated front, and because that is where they beat out the Arnhem thing, put paid to that.
Yep.
That was where they were really sort of pulled together. And a man who was largely responsible for that was General Model, M-O-D-E-L, who on the Russian front was known as the Führer's Fire Brigade, because he was going from one, plugging one hole after the other.
Yes.
But he was a dynamic man, invariably in a flaming temper and foul-mouthed, but ruthless, and he knew what he was doing. And he pulled units back, even individuals, soldiers of groups, hammered them into units, put them behind the defense, and made them fight.
Yes.
And that's when things crystallized. But until then, they were off balance and no particular coordination. Sporadic, as it were. So anyhow, we move. And then again, on our side, there didn't seem to be any sort of big coordinated plan either. We were really, simply get on.
Chasing them.
That's right. And we moved, really, with our battalion in Bust, with a battery of artillery, and just told to get on. There was little information, or no information, no plan, coordinated plan, except get on fast. St. Paul was reckoned to be in enemy hands, but not really too sure about that. So we moved forward cautiously. The Recce Regiment, the Divisional Reconnaissance Regiment, was in front, sort of fanning out. Yeah. And anyhow, we got to St. Paul, and there it was found that Sam, S-A-I-N-S-E,
yes,
was thought to be held.
I think there's another one there, Joe, called Tangray.
Ah, yeah, well, I'm coming to that, Tangray and the Tangray, I'm coming to all that. Now, there's another thing which, again, helps here. That, again, from the regimental history. In many respects, what followed, if it weren't for the fact that it was all battle and lives and so on, is almost comic opera, because it was a mixture of people coming out in flag-bedecked streets with bottles of wine, flowers and fruit, casualties and surrenders. It was all mixed up, and all in the space of about 3 or 4 miles, and in the space of about 48 hours or more.
Yes, now you see the picture you've painted there, Joe, the French people with their flags and their welcome, is a bit different to the picture earlier on in Normandy.
Well, yes, well, you see, this is an intact village.
Yes.
You see, and Bois-le-Bourg was more, well, because we bashed it, but, we liberated it.
Yes.
But these were, well, you see, well, that is what we noticed as we went on through France. People were so much more friendly and pressing on the, fruits and wine and all the rest of it.
Of course.
But which was very different to the surly reception which we found in Normandy generally.
Of course. And I can see why, can't you, Jim?
Absolutely. I can see, So this, again, was a very scrappy affair. And what was decided on was to go as far as here, on the information given. If we had to take Seynes, and Valhoun was possibly occupied, we had to take that first, and then go on there.
Right.
What was decided on eventually was a battalion still in Bust would get up to this area here, which was seen to be a convenient sort of area to debus. Carrier platoon would form a screen, protective screen. We would debus and then secure this place, if it was held.
Balloon.
Yeah, and then go on. So anyhow, that happened, and that was in the evening. And what we were aiming to do was to go and do this at night. Again, a lot of this I'm relating from the history because I was not involved. I was involved eventually, and I'll tell you, but yes, we'll come to that.
Yes.
But I wasn't directly involved in that, in this one. Anyhow, to attack this. So that was decided on. The buses went back. And actually, further back at St. Paul, we got all this information. What it was decided on then, battalion, was that there was a clear road ahead. The battalion would move on, two carriers abreast, and the rest of the companies, in a certain order of march, or wheels rather, and go roar straight ahead, 30 miles an hour at one time, to get to this place.
Yes.
And anyway, this happened, and the carriers formed the screen, and we debussed, and went on. And this was sort of almost in the dark, and when light came, the right-hand company, which I think was and the Captain Stockings, second in command there, saw some Germans who seemed to be anxious to come out, and he beckoned to them, and out came two officers and 94 other ranks.
Oh, right.
So that was Valhoun. And the thing is that what could be gathered from these people, we talked about the general confusion, sporadic fighting and so on, was that the Germans here thought that there was an armoured column roaring up the road.
Oh, right.
And in fact, that we were pretty well inside one of their defensive positions.
Yes.
Because a regimental aid post, you know, their first aid post, is not very far away. So they thought we were in the middle of them. Yeah. And their morale not being all that high, not these people anyhow, they thought, well, that's it. Anyhow, we moved on. And Tangri just welcomed us with open arms.
Yes.
Flags out in the streets.
Yes. Liberated.
Why, absolutely. Mm. And then what the CO decided on was to send carriers ahead to France to find out from the locals whether the place was occupied or not.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, sort of quite close by. And they came back with 148 prisoners. So all that was decided on, and then in order of march, we went. Really, I mean, thought there was nothing there, so we went on a definite order of march. D, A, C, B companies, with the commanding officer at the head in his own carrier, with his battery commander to coordinate the defence of Sens, because that was our objective when we got there. And anyhow, that was decided upon. And then suddenly, there was a resounding whistle of a shell and a burst straight almost next to the CO's carrier. That and also damaged the battery commander's carrier and so on. What had happened was that the Germans had wheeled a field gun at the crossroads at Sand, fired straight down the road.
Right.
And in fact, opposition was stiffening.
Yes.
And he was very lucky to escape. My company commander, Lake, was knocked out, concussed. Anyhow, I was then, we were then leading company, and I was told to take Sens with a wide movement, two platoons, which I did.
Mm-hmm.
And we had found a gun, a junior German officer, and a few men. They didn't put them in resistance. And one of the things, because they're all these things are telltale, the German officer in his leather pouch had a huge slab of butter wrapped up in leaves. Obviously, they were feeding, you know, as and when they could.
Yes, yes.
Anyhow, that being done, a certain amount of mopping up, and B Company had quite a few casualties. I established two and around. Eventually, we established a defensive position next morning, a bit further up.
Just north of Sound.
Right, yeah. But the enemy appeared to have disappeared, and my two platoons are disposed here. But again, you see, it's so awkward, so sporadic, so difficult.
Yes.
There's a little churchyard there. This doesn't show full benefit. There's some more houses along there. Mm. But in the evening, when I was looking around my disposition, accompanied by an NCO, and walking by the wall like that, cemetery, and here there was a little pathway here, and some steps lead down. Mm. Suddenly, there's a burst of fire just as near as this.
Yes. A yard from where you were.
And I looked around, and there, at the top of the steps, was a German machine gunner. Mm. Vanished.
Yes.
But that's the way it was.
Yeah. So you had to be on your vehicle.
Oh, absolutely,
all the time,
yes. And although I think I'm sure that they were also in the houses on the further down. Mm. In fact, our signals officer went into one of those. Well, you're still civilians living in them. Mm. Went to one of those, and he was hustled out in great speed because he was still occupied by the Germans.
Yes.
But that's the way that's the way that was. Mm. Also, during the day, before it got dark, with my field glasses way out in the distance, and this was we have here Sound Hall. Oh yes. Calais, that's what the area.
Yeah.
Saint Paul, Calais.
Yeah.
Way out in the distance, moving in that direction, I could see a whole trail of Germans moving on foot.
To the east of you, this is Joe, isn't it?
Amongst them were country carts, obviously taken from two wheelers, four wheelers, and Germans dragging guns by their hands.
Yeah.
And that gun that fired. At, had no trailer, no horses or anything.
No.
He must have been manhandled.
Yeah.
Now, my conjecture, is, I mean, again, hindsight of all these things, is that the troops that were in this area were a flank guard for these other people.
Retreating.
Yes.
Yes.
And that's my conjecture.
Well, that could have been part of the very heavy forces that were built up around.
Absolutely, yes. By that time, they'd run out of petrol, they'd run out of everything, they'd run out of supplies. Mm. As I said, telltale, see this butter and so on.
Yes.
And picked up where they could, and forced or otherwise, from people all around.
Mm. Yes.
And so that was, well, that was that little battle after that had disappeared. Mm. And we went on.
Yeah.
And you but that is that scrappy little thing, as I say, almost comic opera, because it was a, within a short space of time, and it was a relatively small area, you had, you know, flags and wine and fruit, you had casualties, and most unexpectedly, you know, when we were expecting to get to the Saints with nothing there, because all these prisoners have been marched back, you have a battle.
Yes, absolutely. So again, you just have to be aware that these things.
Well,
can
that's
happen
it. Well, that's the way it was. I say there was no seemed to be no coordinated plan. You know, brigade advance here, brigade advance there, and so on. I mean, just on, get on.
That's right. As fast as you can.
That's right. Anyway, we got through to our old stamping ground, Armentière, and there went on to Antwerp.
Yes. Which is now, in terms of time, Joe, this is back end of August, early September.
Now, I think I've got the date there. Incidentally, the other thing is, alongside all this, 15th of August, going back a bit, the closing of the Falaise Gap air time, the Allies landed on the south of France.
Right.
So that's another pressure on the Germans.
Yes, yes.
So, Antwerp, 4th or 9th of September. That had been captured by 11th Armored Division, but not heavily defended by the Germans. They had no need to, because they'd mined the whole of the Scheldt. I weren't going to defend this big sprawling place. It wasn't in their plans, I don't think. But anyway, they mined the Scheldt as far as the sea. They held the islands, Vulture and so on there, which had to be captured at some cost. By marine commander and so on, before the port could be used. And of course, we were desperate to get that port working, because up to now, all the supplies and everything came via the Normandy beaches, that long line of supply. So anyhow, we took over from the second Devons, and occupied various places. I mean, the whole big sprawling place. I mean, various dock offices and warehouses and that sort of thing. Particularly sluice gates as well, so they don't get damaged. The Germans were just to the north. We've got something of that here. Yes, Antwerp. Here's Antwerp.
Yep.
Just to the north of Merksem.
Oh, I see. That
area. Yes. Holding that area. Yes. And there's the sprawling. This is a big sprawling place, and there are various things we occupied, vital places. Make sure also, of course, there were no, if we could.
It says, says here there's a German barracks
detected,
here. Well.
Detect, you know, saboteurs and with columnists and that sort of thing, and make sure no troops left there, German troops. It's a big sprawling area, and the Germans were holding Merksem. And again, to what I said before, a lot of contingency plans were made, you know, to push the Germans out and do this and do that. One of which envisaged somebody must have a sort of lacking imagination, wading up in water.
Yes.
But anyhow, these things came to naught.
Yeah.
That there was a very active Belgian resistance group there, and they came above ground, of course, when that stage, and they're quite well organized, and their head was a Belgian officer who had been foreign minister or something in the old Belgian cabinet, but he was very clued up, and they had with them a number of captured German equipment, anti-aircraft, little and two gun things, little anti-aircraft things. Some of our old Bren gun carriers left over after
Dunkirk.
That's right. And quite a few assorted things, and a medical section run by some nurses, quite well organized, and quite a few people. But they tended to do unorthodox things without our knowing.
Right.
Or being told,
right.
Which brought down our own shells on them, because I mean, we didn't know. We thought the Germans were acting. So that was Antwerp.
Had you just a thought here, Joe? Up until here, Antwerp, September. Had you seen any signs of rocket launching sites or anything?
No.
And
those were all rather on the coast area.
Right. Okay.
No, we didn't see any of that.
Okay.
And that went from there. We went into Holland, but that's another story.
Yes, and it's
I didn't really think that we'd get through it that quickly.
It's a story, isn't it? That you want to go on to a bit later on. So I think. So
yes. Well, I think I think it's. I didn't think we'd do it quite as quickly as Normandy thing. Quite
okay.
As quickly as that.
Well, let's stop this tape here. Yeah.
Well, I just say, could I just go on a bit?
Of course.
One thing, I mean, we praise the troops and the battalion for the way they handled all these things, and under very grim conditions and trying conditions. I think a word must also be said for the backup, the queue people. We had a wonderful quartermaster, Moore, who eventually decorated, also a very good motor transport officer.
Yes.
And sometimes it's very difficult. Now, the system of feeding, I think this is important, I mean, apart from anything else, was that hot food came up in the at night under cover of darkness, and troops taken out a few at a time depending where we were. Bougie, for example, things were so bad that in my own company area, for example, I shared a forest with wood with the Germans, and we couldn't move things up very easily because it drew fire, it drew all sorts of things. So our cooking gear was left on site, and we got on with it as best we could in sort of a shelter.
Yes.
But normally, apart from that, the general principle was that the food came up, hot food came up in containers, invariably a stew, of course, something easy, and tea, of course. And you had it, people were relieved in groups to have it. And then for the rest of the day, you had a haversack ration of some sort, which could be a tin of bully shared by people.